Media Masters with Paul Blanchard.
Welcome to Media Masters, a series of one-to-one interviews with people at the top of the media game. Today I'm in the Los Angeles home of celebrity blogger Perez Hilton. Starting out as a freelance writer, Perez originally began blogging as a hobby because, in his words, it seemed easy. Launched in 2004, his website has built up a reputation for Hollywood gossip, as well as outing celebrities. With over 300 million hits per month, Perez is now a celebrity and television personality in his own right, appearing on such shows as TRL, America's Next Top Model, and even on the UK's Celebrity Big Brother. Perez, thank you for joining me.
Hello.
So tell me, how did you come to start blogging then? Tell us about how the journey began.
Well, before we even begin, since this is called Media Masters, and since you are based out of the UK, I will just put out into the universe that I have the biggest crush on Owen Jones. I just invite somebody like, and I'm not him specifically, but hey, if he's available and interested, I'm available and interested, but I want my own Owen Jones in my life. So for 2017, I'm putting husband vibes out there.
Well, we'll mention him on the tweet about the podcast. So are you like a lot of Americans then? You're kind of an aficionado and a kind of lover of British culture and British media.
Yes, and I've always been that way. It started for me, though, with music. I have always loved that in the UK, they're more willing to give independent artists a chance, not conventional type of artists a chance, and that the radio will play whatever they want, which is never going to happen in America because here it's much more corporate and much more driven by money. There, BBC Radio 1 will often play unsigned artists. Here, they refuse to. And that's really upsetting to me. And I think radio in America is in an awful place. And then after appreciating the music, I really just started to appreciate the culture and observing that culturally, they seemed to me to be a lot more ahead in many ways than America.
It's interesting because as a Brit, we always think of the Americans as being ahead rather than us.
No, I think, you know, you guys had a legal recognition for same-sex couples before America did. There, you know, something as, to me, inconsequential as nudity isn't really a big deal. It's in the newspaper on page 3 or page 6 or whatever page it is. Here, it's still such a taboo. Oh my God, she's showing her boobs. Who cares?
We should state to our listeners that both of us are in the nude right now. I think that's obviously we should say that.
And also culturally, I love that, you know, it's part of the culture in the UK to really socialize with your family and your neighbors and your coworkers and to go to the pub after work. And that's just expected of you. And that's what everybody does. And it's also part of the culture there to go to the music festivals and to go see shows and to do all those things. America, which I love, I'm not dissing America. I'm not having a Gwyneth Paltrow moment on you. That's not really part of the culture because I think America geographically cannot replicate in most cities what the UK can, which is it's a very walking country and a very subway or tube and bus country. Here, it's all about the car and you have to have your car and getting your car after work. And, you know, people commute long distances often to get to work and they're not going to want to go to the bar to meet up with somebody. And it's just a different experience. Not better, not worse. Maybe a little worse. No, I'm just kidding. Different.
Because a lot of people in the UK have a go at the BBC because it is, in a sense, a poll tax. Every citizen of the UK has to pay about £130 whether they listen to it or not if they want a television. And that means that we can have a, albeit state-funded, very independent broadcaster that can break bans, as you were saying, on Radio 1. But there is the downside that a lot of people say, why am I paying this money? Whereas in America, you guys don't do that.
I wish that we did that in America. I would be happy, and I think that a lot of people would, to help support the arts, because they are critical, especially given what happened in both of our countries in 2016. Art cannot just be entertaining, but it can also be thought-provoking, and it can also be healing. You know, I'm on the board of directors here in America on this foundation called the VH1 Save the Music Foundation, which their mission is to bring back music education to schools that have had funding taken away. And studies show consistently, repeatedly, that students who study music do well in other subjects across the board. It helps them to excel in other subjects. And I think that we should be lifting up artists that maybe wouldn't be getting the opportunities if it weren't for a program like public funding in the UK. Like, sure, you're still going to have Little Mix be popular, but some smaller acts may not get the same exposure if they were just on commercial radio, like a Capital FM or something like that, or a Kiss.
We're back down to the commerce thing again, aren't we? Because there's huge pressure on educators in America, here in America and in the UK, to kind of get students ready for the world of work, which one of my friends said recently that both our education systems are very good at training pupils and students up to be successful in the 1950s.
True.
Not now, unfortunately. They're not empowering them in the way that you were saying, like inspiring them through music and all of the other kind of arts.
Well, I think one of the problems with that is, for me, students aren't given enough time to discover themselves. I don't know what the structure is in the UK, but here kids have almost 3 months off in the summer. I think that's too much time. I might get criticized for this, but I think kids should only have 1 month off in the summer, and school should be almost year round, you know, with Christmas break and a spring break and a summer break, but not 3 months off. However, I do think that school should maybe only be 4 days a week, with a fifth day being more like, on the fifth day, devote yourself to the sports part of school, or acting, or music, or something else, or something where you're in a leadership role and you get to travel with your classmates to volunteer or whatever it be. But like, I think the fifth day should be out of the classrooms, out of the schools, and you're discovering what excites you and what your passions are.
I'm determined to talk to you about what excites you and what your passions are in terms of the blog and all the various things. But and I will get to that. But just in terms of your analysis of the UK media, you're quite a well-known celebrity even in the UK now. What's your analysis of the UK, given, you know, you went on Celebrity Big Brother and had Katie Hopkins, for example, as our ambassador?
I think that the British media, in some sense, birthed Perez Hilton, because they were doing what Perez was doing before there was a Perez. And in America, it wasn't like that before. In the UK, they loved and still love celebrities with their warts and all. In the US, it was all about maintaining this image of perfection. You know, the girl next door, the heartthrob that everybody wants to sleep with. And, you know, before the age of the internet, it was a lot easier to maintain that false reality. Yeah, because publicists were a lot more powerful back then. Before the internet and websites like mine, it was easier to kill a story. You would barter. Don't run that, I'll give you this instead. Don't run that, or I'll cut off access to all my clients. Things like that. But now, when news breaks, it's instant and it's out there, and taking it back or keeping it quiet is nearly impossible. So I love that not only did the UK media, which I was always aware of ever since I had a computer, because, you know, music introduced me to culture, introduced me to celebrities there, introduced me to what was happening there. They also were a lot more humorous in talking about celebrities than their American counterparts were. Like, if you would pick up an issue of People magazine from 2002, what a bore. Oh my gosh, such a snooze. Now, even People has changed how they talk to their readers. I think that's more exciting. I think it's more real. I'm a fan of reality and being real, or as real as possible, because it's still all fake.
It is. But you are right. There's a huge clamour now for authenticity now in our politicians and in our celebrities as well. I mean, I know Alec Baldwin has had left a few terrible messages on his daughter's voicemail. It doesn't make me respect him less as an actor or as a person. In fact, arguably, it means that I feel that there's more of a sense of me knowing him as a person, which is a good thing.
I don't know.
Do you think it's led to things like Donald Trump as well? Because he is the ultimate in so-called authentic, unfettered. What you get on him on Twitter is the real him, even though half of his tweets are actually ghostwritten for him. People want to feel this sense of connection, even if it may not be true.
I think having a black president and having progress made for groups on the fringe, like gay Americans, those played more into Donald Trump being elected than a shift in tone in the media. And also, though, the media itself is largely responsible because in America, Fox News, which he would almost exclusively call into during the election, they get huge ratings. They're far higher rated than any of the other cable news networks, and they're far right. And they created this culture of distrust and of conspiracy theories and of...
Which many people believe.
No, totally. He believes it.
That's actually more worrying.
He perpetuates it. And as a result, you have people being grossly misinformed and distrusting the government and perpetuating lies. It's sad because I don't think it comes from a good place.
Social media is really odd as well, isn't it, insofar as you can be so selective in what you follow and what you don't. So if you're someone who doesn't believe the so-called mainstream media, your news feed will be full of websites that are Donald Trump-esque, Fox News-esque, whereas if you're someone on the left, you're going to be seeing a completely different thing. And in a sense, it's served to polarise society even more than necessary. There seems to be these two groups of people that are completely disconnected from one another.
I think, everything is cyclical. I hope that in America, what has happened here will give birth to, it needs to be more than one, truly, or changing the other ones that we have right now. I mean, I feel no connection whatsoever to the Green Party, but I think that we need desperately more than just two viable options. People are clamoring for that. Everybody was saying, oh, I don't really like him and I don't like her that much. I don't like either of them, blah, 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 blah. Well, it sucks that we really only had two viable options. Like, Jill Stein was not a viable option. Gary Johnson was not a viable option. Write-in was not a viable option, even though a lot of people did have those other options as their choice. I think that the next election might see a character like a Mike Bloomberg possibly win. I don't know.
I mean, do you think the media will start to take responsibility for their part in it? So, for example, here in America...
The media has to do their job. And it's unfortunate that they can get played so easily, but they have to. Well, first, it's two things, right? The media has a responsibility to cover news. We are now living in this new age where a tweet by a president-elect is news. And Donald Trump, I don't think is the smartest man, but I think he is savvy with an ability to entertain and get people talking. And he knows that sending out a tweet will create news and create distraction from other things. The media knows that too. But they can't ignore his tweets.
Well, certainly not now he's president-elect, anyway.
Even before. I mean, he got so much more coverage than any of the other people he was running against. And he won the nomination. And he was elected president, even though he claims there are tons of millions of fraudulent votes.
I mean, clearly he's been wrong on many aspects of his behaviour and the facts, so-called facts that he said. But do you think he was right to tap into this large contingent of, the British society that voted Brexit and American society, the so-called non-coasties, the people in the middle, that are disaffected with their lives and the mainstream media have ignored, at least they would say from their point of view?
As we've seen in both countries, a lot of that really has to do with people just having extreme dislike, distrust, and an aversion right now to immigrants, but they're necessary.
I don't care what anyone's
from. I've been to London tons of time. All the hotel workers, the majority of them are from Eastern Europe. Why is that? Why are the majority of hotel workers not British? Do they not want to do the housekeeping work? Do they not want those jobs? I find it bizarre. Here, you know, a lot of the workers that do the hard work, the labor, the construction work, the working in the fields and the farms, a lot of them are Mexicans. Why aren't all of the unemployed factory workers moving to California working in the fields? Well, those jobs don't pay as much as their other jobs used to. Those jobs that left aren't coming back, though, because technology changed. The country needs to evolve with the times. We need to, I think, as Hillary Clinton was saying, really foster and help small businesses and having people create small businesses and not these false illusions of, oh, the factories are going to come back and these jobs are going to come back. Those jobs aren't going to come back. We need to create new jobs. We need to innovate. We need to keep moving forward. And it seems like in both of our countries, people want to move back. But we can't go back in time. The world, life doesn't work that way.
I wish it did, for one. But anyway, there'd be a number of...
I don't. I'm happy moving forward. I'm happier now than I've ever been before.
Well, I'm glad about that. But do you feel a sense of responsibility with the millions of readers and people that follow you? Because you must have been courted by both sides of the political divide, given that, you know, the readers that you have and those that support you and that you have influence of are the kind of those hard-to-reach kind of younger people where they feel that, you know, an endorsement from Perez would actually help them.
I am not one of those celebrities, if you call me that, which I wouldn't call myself a celebrity. I'm not one of those people who think that their opinion is going to sway anybody's vote. I just speak out because that's what I would do privately anyways to my friends. Mm. So I behave in public like I do in private. Not because I'm trying to sway your vote or sway your voter or think that anybody really cares what I have to say. I care what I have to say, and I think what I have to say is important. That's why I'm going to say it. Also, I don't think that celebrities should be shamed for speaking out. I've been seeing recently a lot of people, Donald Trump included, shaming celebrities, or even Mark Wahlberg in an interview this week saying celebrities should shut up. They're so disconnected from the average American, blah, blah, blah. Everybody should be A, interested, B, invested, and C, vocal about what's happening. Every single person, period. And I don't also understand this notion that, oh, you shouldn't talk politics. Like, why not? Everybody should. If people were more engaged, more vocal, then in America, we would hopefully have, you know, higher turnouts at the polls and a more functioning government. Hopefully.
And do you get grief from your followers on Twitter and via daily? Like, if you talk politics, do they say kind of, shut up, silly man, just give me the gossip and I don't want your political opinions?
Always. But I've always talked about things that interest me and that I feel connected to from the very beginning, whether that be politics, gay issues, Latino issues, now that I'm a dad, parenting issues. That's what's great about being your own boss. I can do whatever I want.
That was very interesting aside. In fact, I was going to cover some of it later. But let's go back to how the blog started. Sure. Tell us about how the journey began.
I'm a dinosaur of the internet. I've been around since 2004. Gosh, that's a long time.
It is.
Especially in the internet, because things come so quickly and go just as quickly sometimes. I work just as hard as I ever have, but I still enjoy what I do. I still feel so lucky to be able to entertain others, entertain myself, and make a living off of it. I want to have a career like Joan Rivers. She's my ultimate inspiration in that she did so many different things.
She was always herself, though, and she was hilarious.
Yeah, she did so many Sadly different missed. Things. She was unapologetic. And she worked till she died.
Literally, I think, until the day before. She was hosting some red carpet event.
I saw her less than a week before she died doing stand-up at a small club
and
in
she
Times
was hilarious.
Square.
She was like, in a sense, she's very similar to
She wasn't hilarious in that show.
Oh, no, not in that one. She was generally.
I still can be honest, even though I love her, it wasn't her best show.
But you can tell that she had a delight in her job, and the same that you do. When you read your blog, you can tell that, you know, that if you think something's funny, you can tell you're laughing as you're writing it.
Yeah, I love what I do, and there's a lot of aspects of my job I don't love, but that's life. No job is going to be perfect. Nothing is ever ideal. I mean...
So what's the good and what's the bad then? And then we will get back to the journey. Maybe this will be the whole podcast. Sure. We'll keep going back to the question, how did you begin? And we'll never get there. What's the good and what's the bad?
Well, the good
is... And what is a typical week as well? Do it all in one go.
Sure. Well, the good is... There is no typical week. The good is that it's constantly changing and evolving. You know, I compare my job to surfing. Every day you're going to have different waves. Some days you're going to have big waves. Some days you're going to have small waves. It's about getting out there, enjoying it, making the most of it, and improving your technique over the years, getting better at it. Hopefully. I still love it. You know, if you're a surfer, you love surfing. I love surfing. I still get excited about things that I'm talking about. If I didn't, the day that it was just a job, I would stop and find other ways to entertain and be entertained myself. And the worst part of it is really, it just is tied to just being a business owner. When you're a business owner, when you're the boss, you have to work harder than everybody else.
Do you see yourself as a business owner or as an entrepreneur, like a blogger? Like if I asked you, what do you see yourself as? What's the first thing that comes to mind?
Entertainer, because I have websites, I have radio that I do, I have my own podcast. If you want to listen to the Perez Hilton podcast, you can listen to it on Spotify, iTunes, or play.it/Perez.
Brilliant.
Which, it's very different than this podcast. I don't have guests. Because I don't want to talk to anybody. I just want to hear myself and my co-host talk.
I've got nothing meaningful to say, which is why I always get interesting people like yourself at the other side of the table.
Oh, I always think I'm right, which is hilarious. Because I'm not always right, but I always think I'm right. And
do you have a script then when you do your podcast? Or is it bullet points?
I have my bullet points of subjects that I want to talk to, and then we just talk about it. I just didn't want to be talking to this person promoting that show or that reality TV star. I did a little bit of that when I first began the podcast. And I'm like, you know what? I am doing the podcast and I want to do it for me. And if I'm enjoying it, then listeners will enjoy it. And I really wasn't enjoying those segments. Anyways.
So when you set up the blog originally, did you think that it would become this successful? Did you think it would turn into you being an entertainer and an entrepreneur? And when was the moment when you realized that there was something in this?
All right. Because I have slight OCD, I don't really, but I have obsessive thinking, which is similar but not the same thing. I do have obsessive thinking. It's one of the things I don't know how you can overcome obsessive thinking.
I don't think you should. It makes you part of who you are. It does. I'm like that as well, and I don't want to change.
I have obsessive thinking, which sometimes can lead to anxiousness. It in 2015 triggered a few months of anxiety because I couldn't stop thinking about the future obsessively. I'm like, I'm definitely type A control freak, and you can't control the future. You can't control other people. You can only control yourself and how you respond to things.
We'll have a
damn
good girl, though, won't we?
I try. So, thing I dislike the most about what I do now is I miss, you know, like I think when you get older, everybody's like, oh, I miss those good old days when this or that or the other. I miss the good old days without social media. Just because my job in and of itself takes up so much of my time. Now social media is also a part of my job, and that takes up so much of my time.
But you've got the blue tick on Twitter. I imagine that then filters out a lot of the idiots that are giving you
loads of
grief.
No, but I've also got to be on all the other platforms. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Tumblr, I'm on Snapchat, I'm on I quit Pinterest. Nobody's on Pinterest. I'm on YouTube, I'm on Instagram, I'm on all of these things. I got to put content up on Instagram story. Everything, like, oh my God. It's like so much. So that I don't love. If I didn't have to, I wouldn't be as active on social media, but it's my job and I feel like I have to. So back to your original question. Let's just get it out of the way.
Yeah.
Why did I start blogging? Because I discovered blogs. Being a blogger now isn't even that common. You know, I am a dinosaur of the internet. People don't really choose to be bloggers anymore because everybody's a blogger. If you have a Twitter account, you're a blogger. If you have an Instagram account, you're a blogger. You're just using a different platform to blog or share with the world. But
was it a hobby at first, though?
Well, it was totally. I didn't think anybody would read it. It wasn't a website back then. It was just my little blog. And all I ever did at the beginning to get the word out, it was so long ago, 2004. I don't even know if people remember. There was this one social networking site that came before Facebook and came before MySpace. It was called Friendster.
Oh, even I don't remember that, and I'm old school internet as well.
I was on Friendster, and I had a bunch of friends there, and I posted a bulletin. It was bulletins that you posted, and I said, "Hey, everybody, I started this little blog. Check it out." And that was it. And then I was very consistent, though. For some reason, it was just something that I felt like I enjoyed. It just gave me joy. I enjoyed doing it every day, so I started doing it every day, and I just kept it up. And that's one of the things about the internet. If you really want to grow and cultivate an audience, you have to be consistent.
Regularity as mm-hmm. well.
I discovered blogs. I said I wanted to do it. And then I just discovered this one blogging platform called Blogger or Blogspot that made blogging easy. If it would have been difficult or too tech involved, I wouldn't have done it because I'm a tech idiot. I'm not an early adapter. I don't have the latest gadgets.
It was a means to an end.
It was just an evolution of what I had already been doing and whom I always was. Meaning, I went to school for acting. I am an entertainer. I've always been an entertainer since I was a young kid. I would put on shows for my grandparents. So blogging allowed me to just evolve. And that's really what life is all about. It's about evolution. You've got to keep evolving and changing as the years go on, or else you start to resent your life, I think.
So when did the light bulb go off? Where was that moment when you thought, I can take this to the next level, I've got an audience? And how did that manifest itself? Was it, right, there's a business here, or was it something just like, I've got an audience here? What was the next stage?
As I mentioned earlier, things online can happen really quickly, and it happened very quickly for me. Within 6 months of me blogging, I got an email from this TV show in America called The Insider, which is the sister show to Entertainment Tonight. And they said, hey, we're doing this segment on Hollywood's most hated websites. How do you feel if we include you in this segment and if we name you number one, the most hated website in Hollywood? And I said, oh my gosh, wow, well, I didn't even know people were reading my site, A. And B, I don't think people hate it. I think people might be enjoying it. And see, like, heck yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
For years afterwards, I billed myself as PerezHilton.com, Hollywood's most hated website.
I remember that.
So even though I never bought into it, that I was the most hated website in Hollywood, I used it for all it was.
It's PR, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Yeah.
So at that point, you knew there was a business, an audience. What came next?
At that point, I knew, wow, I got on TV once. Maybe I'll be able to get on TV a second time. And that hope, that maybe, was all it took for me to never give up, work even harder, take it even more seriously, and grow it.
Tell us about the blog today, then, and all of the kind of platforms you're across. I know you said there was no typical week, but what's the business model now? Because you're across a number of platforms. How do you monetize it? Is it getting it in the net from Katie Hopkins every so often on a reality show? Is that just one part of the mix?
Well, the business model is to just not give up. I mean, I think I have business instincts, but I'm not a business person. I'm an entertainer. I think about things with those lenses on. And I was listening recently to a podcast called Making Oprah, because I love Oprah Winfrey. I'm obsessed with her.
She's lovely.
And
Can you help me get her on the podcast? She'd be amazing.
It was a three-part podcast, so you could listen to the 3 hours in one sitting if you wanted to. And one of the things that Oprah said on there which she would repeatedly tell her staff when she had her show on, was you need to almost put blinders on, like you're a horse, and stay in your own lane. So I don't even try to compete with anybody else. I can't. I can only compete with myself. I can only be the best version of me possible. So the business model is...
focus.
Yeah, keep working hard. The business model is keep working hard. Hard work pays off. Keep working hard. Hard work pays off.
It's like the old Russian proverb, isn't it? If you try to catch two rabbits, you won't catch either one.
Yeah. I mean, I feel blessed, and that word is so overused these days, but I feel so immensely grateful that 12 and a half years later, I'm still around. But especially in an industry that is so immediate and about the latest thing and what's hot now. I'm not hot now. I was an it girl back in the day. But Paris Hilton isn't hot now either. But she's still making money. She's still a brand and she's still Paris Hilton. And think whatever you want about me. I created something for myself that didn't exist before, that wasn't handed to me, and I'm still here.
I have massive respect for that. And in fact, this question almost seems a little bit sycophantic, but what is it about you and your blogging and the kind of persona that you've created in public, which, like you say, is the real you? Why has that outlasted so many other competitors and other false starts? You know, you started this well over a decade ago. You're still here. What is the secret of how you do it?
There is no secret. The only thing is hard work, truly. I know that some people can stumble upon success. Some people can accidentally achieve fame. But there's not a single successful person that has been able to sustain success that's lazy. If you're lazy, you will not have a career that spans decades. It's as simple as that. It requires hard work. Unless you made tons of money and then don't have to work hard. I don't have a few money in the bank. I still need to work, but I want to work. I love working. You know, it's that Cuban work ethic that was instilled and ingrained in me from a young age. You know, my parents, both of them, fled this dictator to come to a country that thankfully at that point in time and welcomed them with open arms. They both had nothing and they worked so hard to make something of themselves here.
That aspect of American culture is very empowering, isn't it? You can, if you're, like you say, if you're welcome, you can come here with nothing and no one's going to get in your way. No one's going to give you a hand up. But if you're determined enough to succeed, mm-hmm. and you can do it yourself, then the sky's the limit.
And I've always had that determination, even since middle school. I've always just known I was different. I've always known that I was resourceful, and I've always known that I liked to make up my own rules. Always. I did very well in high school. I graduated top 10 in my class. I went to NYU on a full scholarship, and I was acutely aware and shown by the world at a young age that hard work pays off.
Do you, celebrate is the wrong word, but do you think it's good for Cuba that Castro has, I was going to say finally died, because of course you very famously announced that he died in 2007. Maybe you were just ahead of the world on the breaking news.
I honestly think, and a lot of people do, that he might have been already dead now for a few years, if not in 2007. Do I think it's good for Cuba? Time will tell. I think it's good for the hundreds of thousands that he caused pain to, the tens and thousands that he killed, the tens of thousands that he imprisoned. His death is healing for those people. But I'm not very optimistic that things are going to change much in the wake of his death.
I mean, if you look at what Obama's done, he's reestablished diplomatic relations. He's allowed people to come over in and reestablish trading relations as well. Do you think that's all going to be put at risk by kind of a backwards reactionary like Trump? I mean, it sounds like we're all moving.
Well, Trump says he's gonna reverse the things that Obama did in relation to Cuba.
basically anything that he's done that's good, really, looking at Obamacare and all the other things.
So
are you optimistic about the future, if that's not a silly question? Or are you, well, let me say, how pessimistic are you then about the political state of the US?
For a while there, my motto was hope is dead. And I still believe that. And I don't think that's a bad thing to say. And I say it in relation to 2008. That's what Obama ran on. Hope. That was his message. He achieved great things. Pretty scandal-free presidency for 8 years. Kind of unheard of. But that's dead. Americans have loudly said they don't want that. They want something else. And I think that it's a good thing to say hope is dead, because we need to feel that. We need to tap into that. We need to channel that into something positive. And we can't just sit home and be mad and disengage. We need to speak louder and do more. And I know this because I've dealt with people like this in my life, and I used to be one. You can't win over a schoolyard bully with love and kindness. They don't hear that. You need to stand your ground, and you need to be loud. You know, it's one of the oldest sayings in the history of sayings, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. We gotta be squeaking.
What else have you learned in your years of, in terms of how it's changed you as a person? You know, you've done well over a decade at this now. Your commitment to hard work, who you are as a person, hasn't changed. But what have been the lessons along the way where you might have learned something, or it might have challenged a view or a long-held perception that you've had?
What have I learned along the way? Well,
That was new to you.
That was new to me. That nothing matters. And everything matters. I sometimes can sweat the small stuff, as they say. And I don't think that's a bad thing. That's just how I am. It's who I am. But all of those little things don't matter. I mean, I am, and Oprah is too. I am a firm believer in the universe, or some people might call it God, or some people might call it destiny, whatever you want to call it. I'm a believer. I believe in believing. I believe in myself. I believe that most people are good, and I believe that everything will work itself out eventually, even if you don't believe that now. I mean, I've been through moments of anxiety and moments of depression where I didn't believe that, but things got better. Things get better unless you die, and then they don't. But even if you don't think they will, like, eventually, the way you think about things changes, or your strategies and approach to difficult situations, or just a job you hate, or whatever it might be, you learn to cope, you learn to deal, you find a solution. So what I've learned that surprised me is that nothing matters, because that goes contrary to what I used to believe. I believe that everything matters really deeply.
Right now. Yes. Still, it reminds me of an old Scottish phrase, what's for you won't go by you. I always believe in that. But do you, I mean, Facebook, for example, it has this on this day thing now where it repeatedly kind of reminds you of embarrassing posts that you posted like 8-9 years ago. And I find whenever I look at it now, I end up deleting what I wrote 9 years ago this day, because I think, oh God, did I even think that? Or if I thought that, why did I say it publicly? Do you ever think about that from your blog, some of the spats that you've been involved with celebrities over the years? Do you have certain regrets about how you've like either conducted yourself, or that you've got into a public spat with them in the first place? Because in some ways it was good for PR.
I have a ton of regrets. I live my life in shame a lot, and it's heavy baggage that I carry with me. If I could go back in time, I would change things. You know, I watch interviews a lot, and people are asked that question like, oh, I regret nothing. It's led me to where I am today. But I would rather be less wise and not have caused people pain. Because also what I've learned is I would have made it anyways. I didn't need to do all that. I am special. And I don't mean that in a bragging way or putting anybody else down. I believe that everybody is special. I believe that every single human being is special. And when you find what it is that makes you special and you can share that with the world, that's when you truly succeed. And people, when I say this to them, a lot of them think I'm full of crap or they don't quite get it. Because people, a lot of them really believe that ideas are special. Ideas are not special. Two people in completely the most far apart places on this planet could have the same idea that they might think is revolutionary. I invented something that's going to make billions. Two people could have the same idea. And those two people could execute that same idea in completely different ways. So it's not the idea that's special. It's the person that's special. It's how you do things. It's what you bring to the table. And when you really find that, success will follow.
In terms of some of the fallouts that you've had with celebrities over the years, what's been the underlying reason? Is it that you felt a sense of injustice or that you felt that it was the public's right to know something and the argument started from there? What's the actual kind of moral truth behind them all?
The underlying reason was I would always tell myself, oh, this is what I would be saying to my friends in private. And I view my readers as my friends. Like, I just want to be authentic. I'm just saying what everybody's thinking. But that was 26-year-old me. And eventually, I was like, wow, I'm not 26 anymore, and this doesn't really feel right anymore. And some people can be 40 and still behave like 26-year-olds. Thankfully, I'm not one of them, you know? I am still very childlike many times, and I enjoy not behaving like an adult a lot of the times. Or I wouldn't say that. I always behave like an adult, but I... You know, you can be connected or tapped into youthfulness.
Yeah, you don't want to lose that sense of being playful. That's not a thing of being old.
That's who I am. That's what my spirit is. But I'm not that person who goes out to a bar and, oh, let's do shots. I'm almost 40. I don't want to do shots. No. So, you know, some people are still repeating their same mistakes, repeating the same patterns, doing the same things in their 40s that they were in their 20s. I don't want to.
But like, for example, I know a few people have criticized you when you've outed like gay
which I don't do that anymore.
And I'm interested as to why you did it then and why you did it now. Because
I did it then because, like I said, oh, I would talk amongst my real friends about whom so-and-so is dating and, oh, they're not out and they're dating so-and-so. Like, that was my justification. Like, oh, this is what I talk about with my friends and my readers and my friends. That was the line in my head that I kept telling myself. But then I realized, well, no, I don't want to be responsible for something possibly bad happening, in addition to causing pain to people, which those that I have outed over the years have told me I caused them pain. But also, I think that young people could care less what somebody's sexuality is. And I think that's awesome. I look at somebody like a Troy Sivan, who is this Australian pop star who is very popular with young kids. And he has a huge female fan base. And they love him and worship him. And it doesn't make any difference to them whatsoever that he likes dating boys and not girls.
But it did back in the day. For example, when George Michael was in Wham, it was part of his following to construct this fake character that he was heterosexual.
Yeah.
Even though when you look at the old Wham videos and the Faith video he did it, I thought, how could anyone not know that
everybody
he was gay?
Everybody knew, but they just... You know, it was like the military policy in the US for the longest time. Don't ask, don't tell.
So society has moved on now and no one really cares what anyone's sexuality is.
And I am optimistic for the future because a lot of the deplorables and a lot of the people, even in the UK, who are racist and small-minded, they're overwhelmingly older people. They're going to die. All of these deplorable people will ultimately die, and I hope that we have a younger generation that is more accepting of differences and focusing on the things that make us similar and not the things that set us apart.
And yet, if you look at a map of the world, you tend to see that the religions dominate certain areas. So that might undermine your argument a little bit that, you know, the Middle East tends to be largely Islamic, the Western cultures tend to be largely Judeo-Christian, the Eastern cultures, etc., etc. Do you think that that might undermine your argument slightly, that with every generation things get slightly better, but there isn't this revolution that we all want?
Well, I can only speak for myself. I know that when I was a gay teenager, I didn't see anybody like me on TV. The only one I saw was Pedro Zamora on The Real World San Francisco. And I saw gay people in Madonna's Truth or Dare documentary. And then Ellen came out. And then in the last 20 years, things have changed a lot. Now being gay is boring. Like, oh, okay, he's gay, so what? So I think that in the next 40 years, you know, things will change a lot more. I mean, it's definitely going to take not just a generation or two. It's going to take a lifetime for positive change. Because, you know, in America, up until the 50s. I mean, it was still legal.
Things have moved on hugely, haven't they?
Yeah, it was still legal to do all these things that are no longer legal to do here. Or it was illegal. And on the flip side, it was illegal to do things that are now legal. That was, you know, 70 plus years ago. So it's going to take another 70 years for a huge change. And then there'll be different issues in the future. Who knows what those will be.
But do you not see that you personally might be able to have a political career in the future? I mean, it started with Ronald Reagan. You know, people saying, what, an actor? He couldn't be president. He turned out to be quite a good one. Look at Donald Trump. Many would argue he's the first celebrity, social media, boosted person to get the presidency. Could we see a President Perez in maybe 15, 20 years?
What a frightening concept.
Well, I'll be the first to say I don't think it's that frightening a concept. It looks like I'm your first supporter.
Well, I wouldn't say that being a politician is something I'm passionate about, but I am passionate about young people, so...
But you've gone into spats with people. I mean, Ann Coulter, for example, the prominent mm-hmm. Trump supporter. Mm-hmm. What was behind that?
She was just disgusting and being a vile troll towards larger women. So I felt the need to troll her back.
But obviously
I can still be petty, okay?
I don't think you were petty. I thought that you clearly saw something that was unjust. She was being bigoted and being horrible. And you didn't just stand up to her, but you acknowledged that you've got a few million followers yourself. That brought a lot of attention to how horrible she was, frankly.
You know, I like to think that I am a somewhat well-rounded person. I love entertainment and pop culture, but I also like other things and I have many interests and I like to be authentic and express all of those things to others. But no, I don't ever see myself in politics. Recently I've been going on a lot of tours of schools. Because I'm in that process for my son here. It's quite the process in Los Angeles. If you're not going to send your child to public school, if you're applying to... They now don't call themselves private schools. They call themselves independent schools.
We have that in the UK as well. Plus, we call... Bizarrely, private schools are also called public schools in the UK, which is really weird and confusing.
I could see myself doing something with children. I love being in schools. I love kids. So who knows? I mean, I don't know. I love also my job. I'm totally open to the universe. Like, and I have no idea what it will be.
Do you think there might come a point?
I just wanted to be happy.
Would there become a point though where you might consider closing the blog, say, and everything that you do in terms of your entertainment career, say 15, 20 years from now, where you'd say, right, that's it, I'm retired from doing what I do, and I'm now going to move on to a completely different career? Or do you think you might go part time? Or, I mean, in a sense, I'm kind of assuming that your appeal might tail off a little bit. It might well not, but it sounds to me you're considering other options ultimately.
But I don't think I'd ever give it up. Why? I love it. I mean, I started off as a hobby, and if I never make any more money doing it, I would just continue it as a hobby.
So you mentioned that you used to out people and now you don't. Are there any other behaviours that you now don't do? So, for example, if you've got a celebrity friend who told you something and they didn't say it was off the record or in confidence, but you would assume it was, are there certain things that you now know that you wouldn't share with your readers?
Yeah, I mean, I don't do a lot of things I used to do.
And can you tell us them all
doodle,
now so that we can get some
doodle inappropriate things on people's faces? I don't do that anymore.
I used to really enjoy that, though, that sense of mischief.
That's very juvenile, and there's nothing wrong with being juvenile if you want to, but
it sounds like you've grown up and I haven't. Actually,
I don't draw inappropriate things on photos anymore. I also don't give people stupid and nasty nicknames. Hello, before Donald Trump was doing it, Perez Hilton was.
Absolutely.
I gave birth to Donald Trump. If there was no Perez Hilton, there would probably be no Donald Trump.
That's
hey, maybe
accurate.
I should run for president. Not for president.
No, run for president. Do you think you
would? Well, no, I would. If I was to do something like that, I would have to genuinely believe that I can make things better. And you see, that's the thing. From day one, I've never believed that Donald Trump was doing it for the right reasons. Mm. I know a thing or two about celebrities and pop culture and entertainment. And I feel like I've got Donald Trump very well figured out. I'm 90%+ certain the real reason Donald Trump ran for president is ego and to live forever. Because in 100 years, nobody will remember Perez Hilton. In 100 years, nobody will remember the latest pop star. But everybody in America will always remember every president. You study them in school. You memorize them. Presidents are forever. Entertainers, it's not a guarantee. So Donald Trump wanted to be even more famous than he already was. Simple.
So it's just pure ego that's driven him.
Yes! He's just like Kanye.
You know, in terms of all the celebrities that you've met, what's the ratio of people that you would consider a friend that are friendly and those that are, like, for example, Kanye and Donald Trump seem to me deeply troubled because it's obvious. But I imagine there's some people that still appear quite sensible on the surface but have issues. Do you think that a lot of insecurities and issues drive people to that world of celebrity and they're all crackers? Or do you think there's... you know, I know someone who knows Harrison Ford, and they say that he's a very nice guy, actually, completely well-rounded and, you know, would buy you a drink and you'd enjoy it.
I would say
not
that,
in any way insane.
Yeah, I would say that, like, celebrities are just like the people in your office. Some are really nice, some aren't.
All of the people in my office are terrible people. I'll just put that on the record. Have your readers grown up with you then, as you've changed? Do you feel that that you've got a contingent of people that have stayed with you, or is there any new blood?
Yeah, they both. I mean, I have new readers because I, you know, talk about Shawn Mendes and Fifth Harmony. but I also have readers that say, oh my gosh, I've got kids now and it's beautiful to watch you with your kids. And also, I am not the product. I am the conduit for the product. Meaning, most people don't care about me. They just care what I provide for them. And I'm very well aware of that. I don't have fans. I'm not a celebrity. I am an entertainer who does this, that, and the other, who has readers or people who enjoy this that I do or people that enjoy that. But I don't think I have fans. Like, oh, I'm his fan. Like, I don't really view my relationship with the world that way.
You must get recognized in the street, though. People come up to you. Are they largely friendly? Do they want a selfie with you? What's your interaction with the actual real members of the public?
Well, they're mostly friendly. Every once in a while, I don't get a friendly one. But
what's the strategy for dealing with people like that, then? Are
I
you
just
friendly
keep smiling. Just smile.
Does that antagonize them more? Because I would just run a million miles from people like that.
I care about people, but I don't care about what people think of me.
So, penultimate question then. Of everything you've done in your career, what's the thing you've done that's made you most proud?
The thing I've done...
Great question, that, isn't it?
Over the 12 years, the thing that I'm proudest of is in 2011, I released a children's book called The Boy with Pink Hair. And to this day, I get people coming up to me saying, that is a really special book, and I read it to my students, or my son and daughter loves it. And that means so much to me. I also almost can't or don't take ownership of it. Like, you know, sometimes musicians will say that a song birthed itself, that it just came pouring out of them. The same experience happened for me with the book. All I had was the title in my mind, and I just sat down to write it, and in one sitting, the entire book wrote itself with barely any changes needed afterwards. I mean, whatever, it's a children's book. It's not the most complicated thing to write, but it was a fairly quick and easy, and I think inspired process.
Did you always want to write a book? Did you always feel you had a novel in you?
I had no idea or interest in writing a children's book. It was very flippant. Yeah. I was at a book conference promoting my second book that I wrote, which was about Hollywood and celebrities. Write what you know, they say.
Absolutely.
And I was on a panel with Mario Diaz. He was an actor who used to be on Saved by the Bell, and now he's a presenter. He's on this show in America called Extra, and he was promoting a children's book. And I was on the same panel with him, and I just flippantly said, I should write a children's book too. The Boy with Pink Hair. I had never thought about writing a children's book, and I don't even know where that came from. I think I was just spitballing a title because he had his book and his title. And then I just could not stop thinking about it. I was like, I have to write this. I have to. And thankfully, I was able to, and it's the thing I'm proudest of.
And last question then, not that there's any vacancy, but what advice would you give to a young person that is aspiring to be the next Perez Hilton?
The advice I would give to them is a continuation on the theme I said earlier. You have to not just work hard, you have to work harder than everybody else, A, and B, there is no balance. I think a lot of young people have been fed this false notion that you could have it all. You can't have it all. All but your work should and must suffer. Meaning, if you really want to be extremely successful, your job must be your life. It must be all-consuming. You must work all the time. Romantic relationships, friendships, family, your fitness, personal enjoyment, all of those things should suffer. You can't have it all in your 20s. And I don't even know if you can have it all in your 30s. I don't know if you can ever have it all. I mean, I think hopefully eventually, maybe when you're in your 50s or 60s, you could have truly more balance. But, you know, there's this saying that maybe there's like five or six important things in life. Professional success, romance, partner, or boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, whatever, family, fitness, and fun, right? You can have three out of those five things at one time, but you can't have all five at the same time, especially not if you really want to be mega successful.
Well, Perez, we're out of metaphorical tips, so thank you ever so much for joining us. I've learned an awful lot. I really enjoyed it.
I would just say thanks for having me, and I'll shamelessly plug myself again because I am the queen of all media. If you enjoyed me on here, listen to my podcast, the Perez Hilton Podcast with Chris Booker. You can listen directly on Spotify, iTunes, or at play.it/Perez. Read my website and follow me across social media. I'm on every freaking platform, and my handle is the Perez Hilton.
A Big Things Media production. Big Things!